I had written screenplays and short stories that have not gone anywhere, and they're sitting in a drawer, and they might not ever go anywhere. I really don't know. But I think it's that idea that I sort of never, it kind of sounds corny, but that I never let go of that dream.
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley.
Welcome to Finding the Throughline, where this week I am talking with journalist and novelist Haley Krischer. Haley's journalism has won awards and appeared in the New York Times, the New York Times Magazine, The Atlantic, and Elle, among other places. And for these stories, she has profiled celebrities like Tatum O'Neill and Celine Dion and Gabrielle Union. And she's reported on trends through a feminist lens. Haley's first two novels were for young adults. They are called Something Happened to Allie Greenleaf and The Falling Girls. This year, her first adult novel is coming out, Where Are You, Echo Blue? It's about a journalist's obsessive search for a missing Hollywood starlet, and I, for one, am so looking forward to packing that on my summer vacation. Haley, welcome to Finding the Throughline.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
I'm going to give you a quick lay of the land, and it's also for our listeners. I'm asking you questions in three basic categories. So for folks who listen to the free version of this podcast, which I 100% support and appreciate, each category of questions is released in its own episode and has ads sprinkled in. If anybody here is listening and would like to skip the ads and just support this podcast and my work and my conversations with these creative minds, you can become a paid subscriber to my Substack at katehanley.substack.com, and I will send you the full interview with no ads every week. It's $5 a month and a great investment in your own creativity. Okay, plug over. Let's jump in. So Haley, this is a big question, and feel free to answer it as bigly as someone who used to be in office might say, or as succinctly as you would like. But what drew you to the work that you're doing now?
Oh my goodness, that's such a big question. Mm-hmm. I think I've always been fascinated by the lives of teenage girls and women. But for this book specifically, Where Are You, Echo Blue? It's about a celebrity. And it started sort of there at that point. And I was just really fascinated by child stars and their lives and how they deal with all of their problems and how they have issues with their parents and issues with Hollywood and how that can either suck them in and create torment in their lives, or how it can, you know, make them into this incredible kind of artist. I mean, you have someone like Natalie Portman, who is a child star, and she has had tremendous success throughout her life, or Jodie Foster. And then you have other people who have really struggled and seen very hard times. And so I was fascinated by that whole narrative.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask this question, then. This is a shout out to one of my longtime devoted and vocal listeners, Jim, who shared with me that he is always curious to hear how my guests first got their start writing. So you are the first guest that I am asking this question for, thanks to Jim. But what was it? What was your first gig?
I'm paid gig?
Yeah, well, both.
Okay, well, I did go to Northeastern when I was in college. I went to Northeastern for college. I mean, I was in the co-op program, and so I worked at the Boston Globe as an editorial assistant. Mm. And so I guess that was officially my first paid kind of gig. I found reporters like sort of these like kind of sexy, fascinating people, and you know, they were a little grimy, and everybody was walking around the office smoking. I mean, this was in 1990, so maybe they weren't in the office smoking, but I think I had seen like movies like All the President's Men, and they were definitely smoking in the entire movie. And there was just this gritty sort of obsessiveness and wild sort of mannerisms that I had always been drawn to. And I love true any kind of just true stories and or crime stories or something that could feel, you know, very real. And so, yeah, I started, I was lucky to get that first gig at the Boston Globe through Northeastern. But, you know, before then I had started already writing in high school. I mean, I was writing short stories and novels, and I was working for my college newspaper. And I think the thing about me is that, and I tell this to my kids, is you don't necessarily have to be the most talented person. You just kind of have to be the most annoying person and also want to just do what you're doing and not stop. And there was never a time, even when I said to myself, I'm not good enough for this, which, believe me, I still do now all the time. But back then, when I said to myself, I'm not good enough for this, or what am I doing here, or there are so many better writers than me, I just kept going anyway. I just had this compelling need to write, constant compelling need to write. And so it brought me to many places. And my career hasn't always been exactly linear. I wrote screenplays. I wrote, again, as I said, I wrote stories. I was an editor for, you know, a small weekly newspaper and a writer for a small weekly newspaper. I worked at websites. And I think I just always wanted to be able to create.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I don't know if that completely answers your question, but those were the very earnest beginnings.
Yeah, totally. It answers my question. Well, one of the things that you mentioned, and you talked about this a little bit, that you did feel a compelling need to write, and you mentioned that you tell your kids, don't stop. So I wonder, how do you keep going now at this particular juncture? Like, now you have you're in a different place. And so what keeps you sitting back down to the page?
Oh my God, pure insanity. I'm not. I think to be a writer, you have to have a little bit of a warped view of yourself and the world and have such an imagination and such kind of a need to maybe get out of your own. For me, I use it as a way to think. Mm-hmm. I use writing as a way to think. And so I always have to write. And so I guess I assume if I'm writing a story, then I might as well just continue to write a story. If I'm writing a novel, I should just keep continuing to write it, whether that means 20 years or whether it means a year and a half. I was never one of those people or children who took really no for an answer. And so I'm older than a lot of people who've gotten their first gigs as novelists. I'm about to turn 53, and this will be my first adult novel. And there are a lot of people who are much younger than me. You know, I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's how it just, for me, I just kept going.
Okay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I'm curious if you can distill or perceive if there are habits or practices or attitudes that help you do your work.
Yeah, I think discipline is such a huge piece of this, because to be a writer, you have to write. Like, to be a runner, you have to run. To be a swimmer, you have to swim. And you can't just come to the table and think, I'm going to write something brilliant today. It just doesn't work like that. And I think a lot of people get discouraged if they write something and it looks horrible, or they only write one sentence. And I think the idea is that you have to keep in that writing cycle. And Jamie Attenberg actually does this incredible series called 1,000 Words of Summer. And sometimes she does 1,000 Words of Winter, and maybe it's 1,000 Days. Anyway, so we can, I'm sure, put that somewhere and get that correct. But years ago when she first did it, the idea is that you're writing 1,000 words a day for 2 weeks. And at the end of those 2 weeks, you have 14,000 words.
Wow.
And it can dramatically change whatever story you have if you don't have a story, or just getting into something that you can't figure out quite how to get into it. It forces you to put words down. They might be shitty words, but they're words. And that is, it's so crucial. It might sound cliche, but getting those words out are very important, because then once you're done with that, then you can look back at it and say, oh, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, but wait, here's a thread that I need to expand on. And that tiny little thread can change everything about your trajectory. So that was huge to me when the first time she did that. She actually has a book out now that just came out not too long ago about this process. But when she first started doing that, maybe was back in 2018 or something like that, 17. And I had a story that I had been working on for 20 years. And I had started using some of her practices, like, okay, how can I revise this, but really revise it in an intentional way, without just looking at it and either hating it or hating myself or just tossing it to the side? How can I really revise this in an intentional way? And so those parameters of 1,000 words a day were so tremendous and helpful. And I made, I guess, what was a great revision. And soon after, my agent sold it within 4 days. So,
oh, wow. Which book was this?
This was Something Happened to Ellie Greenleaf, which was about sexual assault, a high school girl who gets sexually assaulted. And so I had been revising, and up until that point, I had been getting just tons of rejections, probably for a number of years. And then Jamie Attenberg had this whole 1,000 days. And I was working on it. And then the Brett Kavanaugh trial came, and Christine Blasey Ford started talking about her experience and how she was assaulted. And it kind of opened this world for so many women who hadn't been able to tell their stories. And so I think both of those two things together kind of created this perfect open door for my story that I had been working on forever. Mm-hmm. But it was about not letting go of the story and that discipline that I had. And it doesn't mean that was the only story that I was working on. There's tons and tons of stories I had written, and screenplays and short stories that have not gone anywhere, and they're sitting in a drawer, and they might not ever go anywhere. I really don't know. But I think it's that idea that I sort of never, it kind of sounds corny, but that I never let go of that dream. I just kept taking myself seriously. Mm-hmm. Because that was an important way for me to just process my thoughts.
Yeah. I love that. Thanks for sharing. So when you're exercising that discipline and that consistency, and you're sitting down to write your 1,000 words or revise your 1,000 words, I want specifics. What time of day is it? Where are you? Do you have beverages? Are you using a certain kind of pen? Like, paint the picture for us.
It changes. I will tell you, it does change. And I do love this pencil, actually. Mm-hmm. And it is a Bic 0.7 millimeter HB number 2.
And I actually, thank you.
Doing my best. I wrote an entire book in this pencil.
Wow.
this year because I read that Lauren Groff writes all of her books in long form first.
Okay.
So I thought, well, if she can do it, I would like to try that and push myself to do it. And it was actually really wonderful to do that. I mean, there's lots of details that I'm sure have been left out, and I'm going to probably only use like pieces of what I even wrote. I have to, first of all, transcribe the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote it in a moleskin, mm-hmm. just a regular moleskin. And writing in the morning, I love writing in the morning. I always have. I've always been a morning person. I still to this day try to write at night, and it always goes nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I still try. Again, I'm one of those people who just, I don't listen to myself. I really should be like getting in bed and reading or just sleeping instead of sitting there with my laptop trying to come up with some brilliant sentence. And then I can't, and I get so frustrated and slam my... It makes no sense, but this is what I do. So I'm sure lots of writers are the same. They're like, this is going to be the moment. I'm going to put it all down. It's going to be amazing. And then, but that usually comes in the morning. So yeah, I get up probably around like 6:30, and, you know, I make coffee. I make sure my daughter, who's 15, has eaten a little something, and make sure she's out of bed. And I walk my dog, and then I sit down and start working. So that's probably around 8:30 to about maybe 12:30, 2 o'clock, somewhere around there. I try to keep going for as long as I can. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the day, I always carry a notebook with me. Mm. Well, you don't have to always carry a notebook if you have your phone, because you could write notes in your phone. But I think the most important thing is that throughout the day, especially when you're revising or you're working on something, you have to be able to have something that you can put your thoughts down, because you will never remember your brilliant thought. No matter how many times you tell yourself you remember it, you won't. Don't trust yourself ever to remember it. And write this thought down. If you're sitting in the Target parking lot, if you're sitting in traffic, tell Siri what you want to say. We have this wonderful machine that does so much for us. Like, so use it as a writer.
Yeah.
There's lots of apps to like do all this as well. I don't use all of them, but I'm sure lots of other people have better ideas.
Yeah.
So
this is just a minor kind of nitpicky follow-up question, but when you look at those notes that you jot down in the Target parking lot, do they make sense?
Yeah. A lot of times, yes. Yeah.
So you're kind of writing down a complete idea, as opposed to, I think sometimes what I do is I think, oh my God, first of all, I think I'm going to remember it because the idea is so brilliant in that moment that it's going to just burn a pathway in my brain that I'll never lose the access to. And then if I do write it down, I can continue to be swayed by the brilliance of that idea and just write down like two words. And then later I'm like, I'm not exactly sure why I thought this was so brilliant.
See, that's where you can't trust yourself.
Okay. That's where I'm going wrong.
That's when you tell yourself, no, Kate. No, don't get up. Write the whole thought. Mm. Or if you're not writing the whole thought, tape yourself. You have the voice memo. Mm. Just start blabbing. Just start telling yourself, just talking into a voice memo. Those to me have been some of the most helpful things I utilize, because half of what I'm saying, let's say I'm talking to, you know, for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, maybe, you know, a minute of it is useful, but that I need that, because when you're moving, you know, writers were so sedentary and isolated, and we forget that we actually need to like be outside and be inspired by nature, talking to people and listening to people and observing life. And those moments trigger us and trigger ideas. And so we have to be able to say those moments or to record those moments. And it's great. We're walking around with, you know, we only used to have like those little Olympus tape recorders. Now we're walking around with a full-on secretary. So you have to use it. Don't just say two words. Get the whole thing out there.
This has been a very helpful workshop. Thank you. That brings us to the end of our questions on the practicalities of how Haley got to where she is today and how she gets her work done. So many good details. Can't wait to implement these. Coming up in the next Finding the Throughline episode, I'm going to ask Haley about the mindset, the interior side of writing, asking her things like what her inner critic loves to tell her and what collective beliefs she wishes we would all wake up from. So stay tuned for a preview of that episode just after the credits roll, and we will talk to you again on Wednesday.
Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you. Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at Kate Hanley Author. Here's a little preview of what's to come in part two of this interview.
Yes, I'm writing for myself. I'm not trying to write to like get someone to like me or get published or make it somehow commercial. I wouldn't even know. I'm sure people have a formula for that, but I certainly don't. But when you connect with somebody, it's that human connection, because we're writing all about humans and about people, whether it's fiction or nonfiction or poetry. You're writing about the human experience. And so when somebody connects with that, it just is, it's an incredible feeling.
I'm Kate Hanley, and this is Finding the Throughline. More to come on Wednesday.